Tonight, devastating images from a suspected chemical attack by Syria's military. Dozens reported killed as President Trump blames Putin, Russia, and Iran for backing the Syrian regime. A community mourns and comes together after the crash of a junior hockey team's bus killed 15 people, and pro teams on the ice honor those lost. The migrant caravan cited by President Trump as he ordered National Guard troops to the border with Mexico. Tonight, we meet some of those trying to make it to the United States. A top chef brings his skills to an unlikely place as he tries to change how we think about hospital food. And the message in a bottle from years ago that washed ashore just as a hard-hit community needed some hope.
This is NBC Nightly News with Kate Snow.
Good evening. The reports coming out of Syria tonight are disturbing. Dozens of people dead after an apparent chemical weapons attack in the city of Douma, including many children. Syrian opposition activists and aid groups blame the Syrian government, as did President Trump. A State Department spokesperson said today the reports, if confirmed, are horrifying and demand an immediate response by the international community. U.S. officials tell NBC News the National Security Team is expected to meet tomorrow to weigh the evidence and options on how to respond. We get the details now from Tammy Leitner, and a warning, some of the images are disturbing.
The sound of a child's cry, alive and being treated. After dozens of Syrians choked to death in a suspected poison gas attack on the rebel-held city of Douma. Activists say barrel bombs fell in hospitals and shelters last night. Many of the dead and dying found crouched in basements. Douma is one of the last towns still controlled by rebels in the area. The Syrian government has attacked it for years and vowed to retake it.
Were there many people hiding in the shelters there in Douma?
Some told us that they had been scared to come out of those shelters and that people had come out of the shelters and they'd been killed.
If it turns out that chemical weapons were used, President Trump will face a dilemma. Last April, he ordered cruise missile attacks against the Syrian military in retaliation for a sarin gas attack, but recently announced his desire to pull troops out of Syria.
Very soon. Let the other people take care of it now.
Today, the president called the attack mindless, pointing a finger at Putin's Russia, Iran, and Syrian President Assad, and promising a big price to pay. The regime there claiming terrorist groups planned the attack.
I wouldn't take anything off the table. These are horrible photos. We're looking into the attack.
An emergency meeting of the UN now set for Monday. The deadly attack forcing the world to figure out how to respond to the latest atrocity in Syria. Tammy Leitner, NBC News.
This was a difficult day for a small and close-knit community in Canada, shaken by unimaginable loss. 15 people, most of them members of a junior hockey team, were killed when their bus collided with a tractor trailer on Friday. Tonight, the players are being honored throughout Canada and beyond. Ron Mott has more from Saskatchewan.
On this Sunday in Humboldt, mass celebrated.
A moment of silence.
A devastated community at once grateful and grieving. The Broncos are more than just the hometown team to root for. The bond is much deeper, by necessity in this small town where host families become home away from home.
It's not just that they are our hockey team that we go and watch and cheer and love, but you know, they're pillars in the community as well.
At today's pancake breakfast, some managed smiles, a fundraiser for the team, adding to a GoFundMe effort nearing its $4 million goal.
So this is a personal loss for just about everyone in Humboldt.
Yeah, pretty well, for the whole community, yes.
Help is abundant. Some may say it's the Canadian way, a three-hour wait to give blood.
Just do what you can to help out the hockey community.
The sudden deaths on an ill-fated bus trip Friday have touched hearts far and wide. NHL teams honored them throughout the league. A moment of silence in Philadelphia, Chicago and Winnipeg players taking on their name. Humboldt's mayor thrust into the role of consoler-in-chief.
It's going to take some work, some support from not only the community, but from elsewhere to get through this.
A day of prayer concludes tonight with a vigil at the arena where the Broncos play. Hockey, as always, bringing people here together. Ron Mott, NBC News, Humboldt, Saskatchewan.
Now to the growing trade dispute between this country and China. And if it is, in fact, a war, President Trump tried to give the impression today that it could still be a friendly war. Let's get the latest now from NBC's Janice Mackey-Frayer. She's in Beijing. Janice, good evening.
Kate, President Trump appears to be trying to ease fears of a full-blown trade war with China. On Twitter, he said he and Chinese President Xi Jinping will always be friends and that China will remove trade barriers because it's the right thing to do. This is the president's pattern. He will call out China on trade and then talk up his personal warmth with Xi. But China is not backing down, and it's Xi Jinping directing this tougher stance. China has vowed to counteract with great strength if President Trump makes good on another $100 billion in tariffs. China could next target the services trade, where the U.S. actually has a big surplus. China says negotiation now is impossible. The editorials here have been ramping up nationalist rhetoric, painting the U.S. as a public enemy of free trade. Now, on Tuesday, Xi Jinping will give a speech at a global business forum. This is his first public address since the trade threat started, and he's unlikely to mention President Trump by name. Kate?
Janice, thank you. And here at home, there's more talk this weekend about the president and some top members of his staff and whether they have a future in his administration. Publicly, at least, the president is still supporting his chief of staff, as we hear from White House correspondent Jeff Bennett.
President Trump ripping the latest report that he and his chief of staff, John Kelly, are at a breaking point. Tweeting today, story on John Kelly isn't true, just another hit job. Blasting the Washington Post reporting on Kelly's clashes, repeated threats to quit, and fading White House influence. While the president publicly defends him,
I think General Kelly has done a really great job.
Privately, he's frustrated by Kelly's attempts to bring order to a freewheeling West Wing. Mr. Trump considered firing Kelly last month and Wade essentially acting as his own chief of staff. Three people familiar tell NBC News.
You cannot run the White House the way you run the 26th floor of Trump Tower. And that's the lesson of the first year of this presidency.
While Kelly's future appears in question, EPA Chief Scott Pruitt seems safe for now, despite escalating ethics scandals over pricey travel and his 24/7 security detail. So far, the president has Pruitt's back.
Scott has done a fantastic job. I think he's a fantastic person.
All this as the president gets ready to welcome a trio of new hardline advisors who will help guide the U.S. approach to hotspots around the world.
Those hawks, John Bolton starting tomorrow as National Security Advisor, Mike Pompeo moving from CIA to State, and Gina Haspel tapped for CIA Director, both facing tough Senate confirmation. All this ahead of President Trump's proposed summit with Kim Jong-un. Administration officials confirming today that the North Koreans are willing to talk denuclearization if and when that meeting takes place. Kate?
Jeff Bennett at the White House for us. Jeff, thank you. It was reporting on a caravan of hundreds of migrants traveling through Mexico that caught President Trump's attention and figured into his decision to call up the National Guard to the border. As hundreds of those soldiers are sent down to Texas and Arizona, we sent NBC's Mariana Atencio to Mexico to report on the migrant group.
Catherine is teaching her one-year-old daughter, Ashley, how to walk in this makeshift shelter in Puebla, 2 hours outside Mexico City.
Do you want to get to the United States? ¿Quieres llegar a Estados Unidos?
Sí, quiero llegar a Estados Unidos.
I want to arrive in the United States because I want to give my daughter a better future. They are among the roughly 600 migrants who caravaned here in the hopes of making it to the U.S. border. President Donald Trump has called the caravan dangerous.
Almost all Hondurans, the migrants have been traveling for over 600 miles. These are the people, mostly parents and children, President Trump has cited as the reason to send up to 4,000 troops to the U.S. southern border.
Legal seminars are being conducted throughout the day here, given by volunteer attorneys from the U.S.
People want to know, if I turn myself in at the U.S. border and ask for political asylum, what is going to happen to me and my family?
Por las pandillas.
I came because of the gangs. You cannot live in our country. Even with the National Guard headed to the border, Catherine says they will press on, continuing down a long road toward a home that they hope will offer safety. Mariana Atencio, NBC News, Puebla, Mexico.
3 years of civil war in Yemen have taken a terrible toll. One of the poorest countries in the Arab world, Yemen has been swept up in a conflict between two factions, one backed by Iran, the other by Saudi Arabia. As Keir Simmons reports, civilians, especially children, are caught in the middle.
Poverty-stricken Yemen has been devastated by war amid relentless bombings. Many parents here cannot afford to even feed their kids. 7 million young lack food. 2 million, like 14-month-old Samir, are severely malnourished. Samir's home, a dusty village in Mahra, South Yemen, where his family lives in a mud hut. We found him at the embattled Ibn Khaldun Hospital. Samir's health is now improving, the family say, but only slowly. For 6 months, NBC News documented the lives of children in depleted hospitals across war-torn Yemen, finding few doctors and not enough medicine.
There are children that live in remote areas that we couldn't reach. And those are the children who die every day because we don't have access to these areas, and children there contract cholera.
This is Sabine Hospital in the capital, Sana'a, a center for malnutrition, the main killer of children under five here. It is overrun and overwhelmed by young patients. Scales not needed to know 2-year-old Neda is starving and sick. Shortly after these pictures were taken, she died. The hospital simply didn't have the medicine to treat her. I tried to make her drink all night, her mom says, in tears. Neda's family carry her from the hospital bed to a tiny grave. 3 million children have been born since the war began. Countless have died from its ravages. Half those who survive the fighting are stunted by hunger, their futures stolen by war. Keir Simmons, NBC News.
So hard to see. Back here in this country, Bill Cosby is due in court outside Philadelphia tomorrow morning to be tried again on charges he sexually assaulted Andrea Constant back in 2004. Last June, the first trial on those counts ended with a hung jury. This new trial will be in the same courtroom in front of the same judge, but with some notable differences. And it's all happening in a new cultural climate, the era of Me Too. Last time around, the jury deliberating Bill Cosby's fate came in from Pittsburgh. This time, the 12 jurors are from the Philadelphia area.
We will want them to erase everything that they heard outside this courtroom when they come in for Monday.
Cosby has a new lawyer. Tom Mesereau famously defended Michael Jackson against child molestation charges.
They've been much more aggressive pre-trial. They have fought hard to try to get an additional witness in who would potentially raise the question of whether Ms. Constant was pursuing this for financial gain.
On Friday, the defense objected to one of the chosen jurors, saying he'd already decided Cosby is guilty. The biggest change since the last trial, of course, the Me Too movement. Women stepping forward with accusations of sexual assault and harassment in Hollywood and beyond. In the retrial, the judge is allowing five other Cosby accusers to testify in addition to Andrea Constant.
If they are believable, it will enhance her credibility significantly because there were things jurors obviously had a problem with in the first trial about her recollection of dates, recollection of places, the fact that she continued to have contact with Cosby.
Cosby has denied all the allegations against him, but during the civil suit Constant filed against him in 2005, he admitted to sexual contact with Constant and to obtaining quaaludes with the intention of giving them to women he wanted to have sex with. That case ended in a settlement. The details of the payout were not heard in the last trial, but the judge indicated he might allow it in this retrial. And legal experts say that could cut both ways. Jurors could see a large payout as evidence Cosby did something wrong or as an indication Constant's motivation was money. There is no sign tonight that the teacher walkout in Oklahoma is about to end. In fact, the walkout is being extended into a second week in the state's biggest districts as the teachers keep up their pressure on lawmakers to find more money for the schools. Blake McCoy has more now on this latest teacher rebellion.
Tonight, teachers in Oklahoma preparing for week 2 of a walkout are finding unexpected allies.
I am so proud of our teachers for walking out and striking.
Becky Murphy is a lawyer. She and nearly 200 of her female law colleagues will visit the Capitol Monday to mediate a resolution. Or they say they'll run for the legislators' seats come November.
If you're not willing to come up to the table with a solution, then I'm going to find somebody who will do it for you.
It's the evolution of a movement that started simply as a Facebook group by middle school teacher Alberto Morjon.
Are you surprised about how this has taken off?
It surprises me a little bit, but then it doesn't because there's a problem. I mean, you can hear him right now. There's a problem that needs to be fixed.
Educators' demands are far from met. A $10,000 raise for teachers over 3 years, $5,000 for support staff, an additional $200 million for classrooms. This is where things stand. Despite signing off on that average $6,100 raise, Governor Mary Fallon has taken heat for comments teachers say are out of touch.
I said sometimes it's like a teenager always wanting a better car. You give them one thing, but they want something better.
The teachers union tonight believes they are reaching a tipping point, but as we enter a second week, parents must once again figure out childcare, what to do with their kids. Kate, many are now questioning how long this can last.
Blake, thank you so much. Blake McCoy. Still ahead tonight, great food created by a top chef, the unlikely place where they're now using the word gourmet, and the diners love it. Well, let's face it, there's nothing particularly pleasant about a stay in the hospital, and the food is often part of the whole miserable experience. But what if your food were prepared by a top chef, and it was actually good and good for you? Here's our medical correspondent, Dr. John Torres.
Sizzling, sautéing, dicing. It's a race against the clock.
10 seconds.
But this is no ordinary cooking challenge.
It's a little surgery, you know, we pick up some things while working in a hospital.
It's a groundbreaking effort to turn hospital food from bland to grand. Acclaimed chef Bruno Tysons dished up meals for celebrities around the world. Now, he's been hired to transform the menu at 23 Northwell Health locations across New York.
My goal is to make sure that every patient gets great food of the quality of a restaurant.
His recipe is simple. Use fresh ingredients, get rid of sugary sodas, and nothing frozen or fried. Patty Sobel is training with him. It was her own mother's battle with cancer that inspired her to become a hospital chef.
She would have her tray in front of her with unidentifiable proteins, something that would look maybe like a pudding.
The first thing Chef Bruno taught her, his secret for the ultimate healing food, homemade chicken soup.
So how is your chicken soup different than other hospitals?
Well, let me show you the first thing. We use whole chicken.
It's a difference.
Oh, yeah.
82-year-old Joan Roberts can taste.
What is it about a bowl of chicken soup that's so healing?
I guess because, as they call it, mother's chicken soup. Mother cooks with love.
Taking care of patients with perhaps the greatest medicine of all, food from the heart. Dr. John Torres, NBC News, New York.
Looks really good. When we come back, we'll tell you what caused this suburban home in Texas to explode. Here in New York, an update now on the fire at Trump Tower that destroyed an apartment and killed the man who lived there. Firefighters said when they arrived, the apartment on the 50th floor was fully engulfed. More than 200 firefighters responded. 6 were injured. President Trump and his family were in Washington at the time yesterday. The cause is still being investigated. And a harrowing experience this weekend for a family in a suburb of Dallas. Their house exploded, and the blast was caught on a home security camera across the street. A car had lost control, crashed into the house, striking a gas line and causing the explosion. 3 members of the family were injured, along with 2 police officers. When we come back, the message of hope from this class that crossed the ocean in a bottle. Finally tonight, it's been 7 months since Hurricane Irma slammed into the Florida Keys. Amid the devastation, as the recovery got underway, a sign of hope from thousands of miles away and decades ago. NBC's Maya Rodriguez has the remarkable story.
The Florida Keys have a rhythm all their own. Bright colored homes, soaring wildlife, and soft sea breezes.
It's nice and clear today.
Ruth and Lee Huniger call this slice of Key Largo home. Last September, Hurricane Irma slammed their piece of paradise as a Category 3 hurricane.
What did it look like out here?
It was pretty messy.
As the Hunigers began cleaning up the streets around their neighborhood, they found something, well, unusual.
It looked like a piece of trash, and it was right over here.
Amid the trash, a treasure.
Do you always think you'll find a note in a bottle? And this time we did.
That letter appeared to be written by a child. It said,
"We are learning all about pirates. We would like to see how far this message goes.
We are class 2-3, Chapel Park School, Academy Street, Forfar Angus, Scotland."
4,500 miles and a lifetime away, retired teacher Fiona Cargill used to teach her elementary school students in Scotland all about pirates.
The children thought it was great fun.
Back in 1992, as a class project, Fiona and the students handed 5 messages in 5 bottles to a local fisherman and asked him to throw them into the North Sea.
We just wondered if they would reach land.
This one finally did.
It's a small world after all.
The Hunigers wrote back.
I was totally gobsmacked. I just couldn't believe that the bottle had been in the water that amount of time and that it had traveled that far.
Fiona and the Hunigers have since remained in touch. So have the young pirates, Fiona's former students, as the story spread on Facebook.
It was perfect.
Trip to Scotland?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's now on her bucket list.
Two very different places, bound together by a long-ago letter and the sea. Maya Rodriguez, NBC News, Key Largo, Florida.
1992. That is NBC Nightly News for this Sunday night. Coming right up on Dateline, Lester Holt takes us inside the hunt for the notorious drug lord El Chapo. I'm Kate Snow. For all of us here at NBC News, have a great night.